to our first ever Elk Grove Unified School District candidate forum night. I'm Carrie Washington, one of our computer resource teachers here in Elk Grove at Carroll Elementary. Carmen Cujito, one of our finest fifth grade teachers from Mary Sakamoto Elementary School, is with me tonight to assist in asking questions to our candidates. From Area 3, we're excited to have Chet Madison.
Yay!
From Area 6, we have Steve Lee and Jake Rambo. Welcome. Please take a moment to check that your cell phones are off or on silent. We would also appreciate if you would refrain from any comments or applause while the candidates are speaking. Remember, this is not a debate, but a question and answer forum. We're all excited to know and hear from our candidates, so let's get started.
Can we ask regarding the format?
Yes, I'm going
yes.
to
go over
this. I would like to go over the ground rules before we begin. We will allow a maximum of 3 minutes for an opening statement. Please focus your introduction on the strengths that you bring to the position of a school board member. After the opening statement, we will ask questions that were drawn at random from the collection that has been accumulated from our membership. We have drawn numbers and a rotation has been assigned to each candidate. Each candidate will have 90 seconds to respond to the question. Everyone will have the opportunity to be the first to answer a question. If time permits, we will also ask questions collected from the audience. We have a timekeeper with a clock that is visible to all candidates. We would like the candidates to focus on the questions being asked. Please refrain from personal attacks on opponents. Let us agree that we will conduct our forum in an environment of respect for one another. We will begin with our first question.
I have a question first. Why is Mr. Madison on the... Why is Mr. Madison a candidate that has nobody running against him up there?
I just love to be here.
I love you too, but you have no opponent.
I was invited.
Yeah. Yeah, we invited and we want all of our candidates to show up. We appreciate them being here.
Be able to answer questions from
the leadership. Why are we still not up there? Why are we still not up there?
Because we are having another candidates forum for Area 7 on Wednesday, October 10th at 6:30.
And Area 1?
Has declined. We had a scheduling conflict. And was not able to schedule all the candidates. So we were looking at possibly another time. There was some concern also that there would be, from Area 1, the Florin area, that they would have some difficulty from their constituents, even though we vote at large, that there was some concern that their constituency would not be able to come down to our EGEA office at this time. At 6:30 to 7:30. So we are looking at coming up with a location for Area 1 and time that would be suitable for them. So we originally did have three school board forums, and we wanted to give Mr. Madison the opportunity to answer questions from our membership. This is our EGEA sponsored candidates forum, and we wanted to give them that opportunity. Right, and they certainly have agreed and have consented and have committed to attend our next forum.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so before we begin with the first question, we're going to give you the opportunity to give you your 3 minute opening statement.
Okay.
Since you came, you got number one, and you're number two, and that's the order that we're
Wonderful. Okay.
Well, I want to thank the EGEA leadership for having this forum and having an opportunity so that I can actually come and talk to you. The most important thing, I think, I have to acknowledge my two campaign managers, both my sons, Lisa and Levin, from Carroll Elementary. And for those of you who are from Carroll, again, I want you to tell their teacher that the homework was done before he came. And also my wife, who is here tonight. She's a librarian over at Eddy. And many of you who are concerned about the Elk Grove School District enough to spend time out of your busy schedule to come and have a dialogue. I think the number one thing that is important to me is our future. I think the more I look at it, even though kids are only 25% of our population, they're 100% of our future. And that being the case, I think what's important is we have to make sure that we properly prepare students for the future. And that involves making sure that the teachers, the frontline staff, actually have the resources to be able to render the necessary curricula to the necessary things for the students in order for them to be successful. Now, I come today to you to talk to the leadership and also to the folks at home. I understand this is going to be failing. Education is not, it's very important, and we have to take it seriously. And because of that, we have to make sure that we pay attention to these things. Without a free public education, I wouldn't have the opportunities that I have today. 30 years ago, I came to the United States not speaking a word of English. But because Mrs. Williamson, Mrs. Cox continually drilled to me that I have to learn this English, or else I won't survive in public schools. And you know what? Magically, somehow it happened. Overnight, I learned English, and I'm proud to say that because of that, taking part in that free public education, I am proud to stand here to say that I'm prepared to give back to those students who need that extra help, to see that those students who are performing high, who are performing well, to give them the next challenge. I think that in the last several years, I've seen many of the teachers in Elk Grove Unified struggle with trying to find the resources, but the board has not answered, have not listened to the teachers. In a nutshell, that's why I'm running. I remember the protests, I remember the disagreements, I remember the issues that came up. As an educator with the Sacramento County Office of Education, I have heard your cries. I'd rather be home. I'd rather be volunteering in the classroom, rather being a watchdog at Carroll Elementary. Those are time that I want to dedicate to my kids. But when my colleagues scream out for help, I have to respond. Thank you.
You pass it back. Thank you.
Good evening. I guess I wasn't supposed to be here tonight, but I am here. A lot of you might know me. I'm Chet Madison. I'll give you a little background about myself. I originally came from the business world in transportation. 34 years with a common carrier, a large carrier, Consolidated Freightways. And I had the opportunity of working with one of the largest unions in the country, and that is the Western Conference of Teamsters. We did a lot of collective bargaining, a lot of cross discussions that we went through. So that was a lot of my past. While doing that also, my lovely wife, Sarah Jo Madison, I think some of you know her, she's been around the district probably longer than me in terms of involvement. We go back 35 years in this district. I had the opportunity of having four children, lovely children that came through the Elk Grove Unified School District and received a fine education. In fact, one of my daughters is a teacher in one of our elementary schools today. Having four children gave us 10 grandchildren. The grandchildren all are within the Elk Grove Unified School District from kindergarten to high school. And believe me, they give us a challenge. And they're all receiving a great education too. My wife and I have been involved in the district, as I alluded to earlier, for many years. Various local committees at the schools. We also participate in district committees. As we move forward, I eventually became a board member. 12 years ago now, I became a board member. Prior to that, just to give you some background on the district, and some of you know here and some of you don't, with me being around a long time, I came to this district, we had probably 9,000 students. We eventually had one additional high school, it was Valley High School, where all four of my kids graduated from. It was the North High School and the South High School. I had the opportunity of also working with four wonderful superintendents. Now you think about how old this district is, we have had a lot of superintendents, four of them. And Glenn Hood, Bob Trigg, Dave Gordon, and Dr. Lamb. And all of them have been real good leaders for us. And we've had a stable board. And if we have a stable board and continue to have a stable board and a good superintendent, this district is still going to do very, very well in the future. I can go on and on, but my time is being limited. The one thing we want to move forward is making certain that we have a good school board to set policies and good superintendents to move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Jake.
Thank you. My name is Jake Gramble. I am the second newest member of the board. I finally dropped the newest part. I've just finished my first 6 months on the board, but I'm not new to this district. My involvement in this district began at a younger age, but about 30 years ago, on the athletic fields at Samuel Kennedy Elementary. You think about this district, we are the home of the oldest joint union high school in the state of California, Elk Grove High School. 120 years old. I'm going to be looking forward to homecoming tomorrow night. I'm a graduate of Elk Grove High. 120-year-old high school, 53-year-old district, and Mr. Madison talked about the stability on the board. I'm only the third Elk Grove High School graduate to ever serve. And the second only recently resigned, Ms. Cooper Levangie, and then the first, well, we named a school after her, and it's quite a high-producing element, our middle school, Catherine Alviani. Elk Grove High School recently adopted some new branding. Kathy Guy is really leading the push as they head towards the 125th year, where that Elk Grove High School is where tradition meets tomorrow. And that really reflects who I am as a candidate running for the board. I reflect the tradition of the district. I've watched this district. I grew up in this district. I'm a product of this district. The successes and failures of this district impacted me. I watched them. I watched difficult times and good times. I love the fact that we're in the Carl Woodbury EGA conference room. Carl Woodbury was the teacher at Elk Grove High School who piqued my interest in government, taking his honors poli-sci class and his AP government class. Carl Woodbury taught me one of the most important principles of government that I've really had to rely upon over the last 6 months serving on the board. And when he said, one of the first things he said in AP government, government is the process of allocating finite resources to meet infinite means, our needs. And that really is the challenge we faced over the last 4 years, $110 million in cuts. They weren't our making. They were really the demonstration of the lack of leadership by those outside of this district to make public education a priority. They've already cut our district $27 million this year. But they've given us the out if Proposition 30 passes. This is not a time when we are really in a district where we can talk about new programs and new ideas and spending. We can talk about new ideas, and I want to talk about new ideas today, new ways to take tradition, the history, the great history of this district. Part of that history was its strong relationship with its bargaining units and the commitment of EGEA and our other bargaining units to the success and solvency of the district. But take tradition and meet tomorrow. The change and the challenge that we face in a state that has yet to really prioritize public education. I'm excited to be here tonight, and I'm excited to share with you over the rest of the evening what I've done, what I will be doing as a board member, and my commitment to this district. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to begin with the questions. You have 90 seconds to respond. We're going to start with Mr. Madison.
All right. If you had 5 minutes of Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan's undivided attention, what would be the focus of your conversation?
Well, I think my first initial start would be the funding of public education that we'd like to talk to him about. The federal government right now, it's on the line of trillions of dollars of 7%, I think, of the budget of being taken away from public education, possibly the first of the year. So we're definitely, I would love to talk to him about that. The second is looking at reforming public education to the betterment of educating kids. It could be evaluating our teachers, our principals, and making sure we have the proper leadership in our schools. It's just a number of things that I would love to sit down and talk to him about to improve our public education. Charter schools is something I'm very, very concerned with. Whether or not we are excelling too rapidly on that, where they're not really getting the job done. We should have them in areas that are totally needed. Put them in the areas where schools are not currently educating some of our inner city schools, and not make a bunch of I call private public schools for some of the most affluent and elite children around. I don't think we really need that. There's some candid conversation I certainly have about that. Thank you.
Well, the first thing I'd say to him is the first thing I said to our members of our congressional delegation shortly after I came on the board. End No Child Left Behind. End it. If you believe that the federal government has a role in education and has funds to support quality public education in Elk Grove Unified School District, then cut the strings, block grant the money to our district, and let us spend it, because partnering as teachers, a board, and a community, we know best how to meet the needs of this diverse community. So end No Child Left Behind, number one. Number two, I would talk to the secretary about taking the necessary steps to make it easier for teachers, students who want to become teachers, who transition to teachers, make it easier for credentials to be earned in universities across the United States. If you want to support money at the federal level, provide more funding, more grants, more loan assistance for future teachers, so that people don't have to make the decision between going to their dream college and the expense that that presents, and then having to forego the career they dreamed of, or taking on the massive debt that drives so many people out of teaching in many of our communities. But I would emphasize again and again with the federal government, Elk Grove Unified, and this would probably be I don't want to miss this point, on programs like Race to the Top, the federal government has said, we have money to support innovation. And my statement to him would be, what is a better incubator for innovation than Elk Grove Unified School District? We have everything from small rural country schools to inner city schools, large suburban high school, middle schools that are leading the way in their academies, our high school academies. And I would say to him, where best to try new ideas? Where best to innovate in this district? And I can't, Lee, I apologize, I ran out of time, but I can't forget when we're talking about our district to talk about the Jesse Baker School. Talk about proof positive that this is the district.
Thank you.
That can lead the way.
Steve, same question.
Well, you know, the first thing I'm going to tell him is he needs to spend time in the classroom. I see it as an educator, when I'm out there in Minnesota Unified and I see the frustration from the teachers, to look behind them and realize that their administrator is not supporting them. Yes, we can talk about funding, we can talk about all these things, and when you look at it, you have a unified school district as large as Elk Grove that is so diverse. We've got school here that needs attention. We've got schools here that are doing quite well. I think what we need to do is we need to look at the schools that are doing well, take the things that work, take it to the schools that aren't doing well. That's what I'll tell him. I tell him that he needs to come and actually see Elk Grove Unified. He needs to spend time in the classroom. He needs to know how frustrating it is to be a teacher and not have resources to deliver the curriculum to the students. And oftentimes, I see it over and over again. You have teachers who have great ideas, who have wonderful things that they want to make happen, and they are put down. They're put down because they're worried about coming back next year. They're worried because their school board has issued a number of layoffs. And they have to be worried about going to that due process hearing to make their case, to justify why they should come back. I would share this with him. I would share with him that funding has to be there and how frustrating it is to be an educator, to be in the front line, and to look back and realize that your school board, your advocate, is out there for you. Thank you.
Our next question, Mr. Rambo. How do you feel about the attempts in many cities to increase mayoral influence over school boards and school districts?
Well, again, one of the models of my campaign, and one of the things that is not just a campaign model, but a mission statement on the board, is kids, not politics. Mayors are elected to do a job, and they have a very complex job. And I know that in some parts of the country, it really works to have city councils involved in schools, but that's not our model here in California. To put mayors in charge of school districts, how do you do that in Elk Grove Unified? Is it David Sander out in Rancho Cordova, a great innovator, but he doesn't know a whole lot about our schools? Is it Kevin Johnson? I don't think we want to go there in Elk Grove Unified. Is it whoever the mayor of the year is in Elk Grove? They've got enough to worry about in this state. We have a good system in California. We have a system that works. We elect school boards. We empower school boards with local control. The real problem is not getting more politicians into the mix, it's getting more politicians out. It's getting the California Department of Education out of the way. You know, Dr. Ladd was sharing with me the other day, we got audited by a CDE on PE with the threat of losing money. Why? We weren't teaching kids how to swim. We don't have any pools. I thought that was kind of the end of the discussion. Now, it turns out CDE bureaucrat wanted our kids to stand on the blacktop and do swimming strokes. That's a bureaucrat down at the Capitol justifying their existence. So no, not more politicians, less. They've already made enough of a mess cutting us $110 million with another 27 over our heads right now. Less political involvement, more people involvement at the district level.
Thank you.
I guess I should stand up, old guy, and sit down talking all the time. Let me say this. When it comes to the encroachment, are you ready to go?
I'm sorry. That's okay. Trying to get it set. There we go, sir.
The encroachment, we talk about government. Government normally does not come in and interfere with schools if we have our act together. What happens to a lot of inner city schools and government and mayors are involved with them? Because schools are done very poorly. They're performing in a very poor way. Elk Grove Unified School District does not need a mayor to be involved with our schools. I think we have some of the best schools in Northern California. I represent a lot of our Title I schools, and it's not one Title I school that's below 700 on our API. Not one. So we don't need the mayors involved with our schools at all. And again, when you see mayors and government involved, it's the inability for schools to perform. Just like we make laws. Why do we have laws? Because people aren't doing the right thing and we have to enforce it to get better. So when it comes to government, I don't need this, whoever's gonna be the mayor of this city, I don't want him in our schools, to be quite honest. He can come and visit, but to make government policies to tell us what to do, we don't need that.
The way I see it, it's about scope. The mayor's job is not overseeing the schools. That's what the school board is for. But, you know, I mean, I see this reform movement out in New York and out in these different cities. And, you know, my biggest question is, isn't your job supposed to be governing the city? Then why are you involving yourself in the schools? So yeah, my personal opinion of it is that it's not within their scope. It's not within their jurisdiction. I think they can recommend something, but really it's incumbent upon the board to actually make the decision. You know, not necessarily, you know, allow a mayor to come in to push their own school board rather. That doesn't make sense to me. So that's where I stand. I think what's important here is to be responsive to the community, because the way I see it, if there's screaming out in the audience, there's folks who are being real loud, I think it's incumbent upon the board to actually pay attention. And when you don't pay attention, that's why the constituency are so frustrated that they have to find whoever listens to them. And in these communities, I'm not there, but I bet you the board wasn't listening to them. That's why they had no other choice but to seek anyone, any elected official who would make a stand, would go up and say, you know what? Enough is enough. You have to listen to these people. And I think that's the problem, that you have a complacent board, a board that's been in place a long time. They have a disconnect with the community. We have to have a dialogue. We have to have regular meetings. We've got to talk to the voters. We've got to talk to the stakeholders. That is what an effective board would be. You've got to be connected. And when you're not, people protest.
Mike, Steve, because the next question will begin with you. We have a number of schools that are entering year four of program improvement. What would you tell the staff of these schools as they enter this planning year?
I'd say the first thing is you got to look to the other schools, you know, sister schools, schools within the school district that actually are working. Take from them. Oftentimes, these program improvement schools, they're in communities that aren't necessarily affluent. And so what you need to do is you may have to revamp the school. You may have to actually look to see if you can engage the community, engage the parents. You know, a great model that I was talking to one of my teacher friend over at Jackman is about the parent-teacher visitation project. I think that's a great element. Those are type of programs that we actually need to bring in because it's innovative. It engages the parents. See, yesterday we were out in Consumnes Elementary, River Elementary, out in Rancho Marietta. That community is unique in itself because that is a distinguished school. That is a school that's doing everything right. They have strong parent involvement, but I'm talking about Reese Elementary. A school that needs extra help. A school that we need to actually bring in innovative programs that we need to engage the parents to bring them closer to school. There's nothing better than having a teacher visit. There's nothing better than having a teacher person connect with a family. And when you have that, you have stakeholders that are buying in. You have buy-in. Then you can actually improve the school. But I tell the staff this, continue what you're doing, look for things that are innovative that you can bring in, and then improve it by engaging the community, engaging the parents.
Well, let me just say the Title I schools, a lot of them that are in the PI or in my area, I want to make clear that PI schools are brought about by taking on government dollars, Title I money funds. And it's unfortunate the way the No Child Left Behind, how it was measured, how it was set up. Every one of the schools that are in program improvement have shown progress year after year. Teachers have worked hard. A lot of the parents are engaged in there. In fact, some of the PI schools are right now have better improvements than schools that are not under the PI category. A lot of folks don't know that. But when you really look at the data, and you look at it very clearly, that these PI schools are performing. We are addressing the issue. We're collaborating with our teachers, with the administrators to make certain that we make the proper progress that we will make coming this coming year. You'll hear more about it. But I get a little bit offended, even from the government standpoint, when we look at our PI schools, particularly in Elk Grove, and saying they're not making improvement. That is wrong. Dead wrong. And it's, the schools are doing very well, but not under No Child Left Behind. And No Child Left Behind came about, in one aspect of it for me, it highlighted all the work that had to be done in a lot of schools. That part of No Child Left Behind was good. But hopefully, come first of the year, that we can do some, the government will do some revision with No Child Left Behind and revise some of the stats on it.
You know, No Child Left Behind, with this whole year four business that it created. It started out as No Child Left Behind. It's a great slogan, the idea. We don't want to leave any kid behind, but the reality is when you look at the hockey stick that the year four program improvement schools are on, it really is leave every school behind, because eventually everyone in Title I slides into this insurmountable series of program improvement goals. So the first thing I would say to all of those Title I warriors in our PI schools that are fighting the fighting for their kids. You're not just teaching. If you're a Title I warrior out there, I know that you're buying your kids shoes. You're taking them, you're getting them dinner. You're wondering if the child had enough to eat that night before. And I've seen the heart. I've been out at Mac. Todd's here. Todd knows we go to Sun Grove together. Sun Grove Community Church, we go out to Mac. We're gonna be there next Saturday. Painting and cleaning, because Marty Hawk asked for somebody to come out and give his kids a school to be proud of. So I would say first and foremost to our year four schools, you're our Title I warriors, you're warriors for children who are being left behind by No Child Left Behind. The second thing I would say is put all the options on the table, and I've said this to district staff. Year four program improvement is about fostering innovation at the school site, and that means all options on the table, because as we know, as we go from year four into year five, we have to look at new governance models for schools. There's a lot of options. One of the things that concerns me is that some options get quickly swept off the table. Maggie and I talked about one of those year four options the other day. You know, it's interesting. I've spent more time in this building with EGA than I have spent in the superintendent's office one-on-one with him, because I've been so interested in hearing, as we deal with year four and we deal with these things, what are the ideas? All options have to be on the table, because year four requires some pretty draconian steps if you don't do it the right way.
Thank you. Next question. What is your opinion of merit pay? That is for Mr. Madison.
Merit pay, that's towards the teachers. You know, I had a little conversation when I came in with Charlie back there. We were talking about teacher evaluations and things like that. And that's something that I'm really anxious to get into. We've had a lot on our plate lately, and we've had some discussions amongst the board members there. Merit pay to me is not necessarily the total right direction to go into when we're talking about teaching kids. I think, number one, before we go into merit pay, we should revamp our evaluation of teachers all the way around. We don't have a good program with that yet. I know a lot of it's going to come forward come this year. I would hope that we could come to some conclusion before the government mandates things on us, that things we don't want to do, because I think it's a great opportunity to start our evaluation system in the right way. And then if some incorporate of incentives in there, then so be it. But the bottom line is that I think what we need is good, strong teachers, good evaluations, and if a merit increase comes in there, we can look at that part of the equation as well.
Well, sometimes you have to define a question by defining what it isn't. I don't support test-based pay incentives for teachers. There's too many variables, and there's too much that goes into these high-stakes tests to begin with, to even think of a pay structure, any kind of merit pay that's going to be tied to test scores. Now, we recognize, I think everyone recognizes, that we need to be looking towards some type of revamped merit-based evaluation system, a better evaluation system that may have merit-based elements in compensation, if for no other reason than that's where the money's at for our district. If we want race to the top funds, we're in contention for $40 million. One of the elements is we have to have an agreement. And I think it's the right way, an agreement, not a mandate, an agreement with EGA about how we would do a merit pay element. To me, merit pay is about recognizing those who perform and achieve and do well and go above and beyond. One of the forms of merit pay that I absolutely support is an expansion of the district stipending program for those of you who are spending time after school, coaching clubs, leading teams, that sort of thing. We've scaled that back way too much. We've cut too many of those programs. As a mock trial coach, I've been fortunate that Kathy Guy has made a priority of assigning not one but two stipends to the mock trial team in Elk Grove. What's the result? 50% of our graduates have gone on to law school. We've won national championships. We go to the world championship every year, and you've had to put up with it because you all know Dave Hill, and you know how much he talks about mock trial. But how many programs? MESA. We don't provide the stipends for MESA anymore. MESA teachers put the money out of their own. MathLeets. And the MathLeet teachers are out of pocket on their own. Let's stipend those folks who go above and beyond.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I am opposed to any sort of pay that's based on student test scores. And I tell you this because when I'm out in the Tomas Unified working with my foster students, it would be unfair to me for my minister to tell me that because they're not performing well, that I shouldn't be getting a raise. The reason why I say that is because there are so many elements that are involved in this child's life. Having this child come to school is already an accomplishment. Now, once this child is at school, then I try to figure out how do I work with this student so that they can actually achieve. And what I do is I take the test scores and I look at it and I break it down to the strands and I said, okay, looks like this is one element that you need help with. And I address that specifically. And that's the whole purpose of it. I think that all teachers, if they're on the pay scale, they should be kept on the pay scale. What I do disagree with is when a district stockpiles money and then they give money to the administrators as raises. That is wrong. I think that the frontline teachers need the resources. I believe that teachers are the ones who make the district great. The frontline guys. Anything above that, anything that talks about how CST scores or any sort of scores, any sort of performance that will come back and to give the teacher a raise or not, I will be opposed to that.
Next question is for Jake. You kind of answered this already, but again, we have teacher evaluations have been an area targeted for reform. What are your thoughts about the evaluation process? And do you support tying test scores to teacher evaluation?
Let's start with the process. One of the things I'm eager to do is see us sit down and through the collective bargaining process, and probably more through a meet and confer outside of the contract, is to look at pilot projects where we can agree to try different evaluations where they're not necessarily tied to actual performance or the actual evaluation. But let's see, let's be innovators, let's try new things. And I think that, one, we can't do it top down. We can't say, you know, we can't have the district design a new evaluation program. I've sat and talked to Charlie and Maggie and a lot of the folks over here. You guys have great ideas, and you need, and your leadership throughout the district need to have a seat at the table. I think there's a much better way to do evaluations. You know, one of the principles I laid down, they asked me early on when I was having my regular meetings with EGA, I was asked, you know, what are your thoughts on dealing with problems? You know, problem administrators, problem teachers, underperforming. And the marker I laid down was, one, you need effective and real evaluations. As a government employee, one of the things I've learned is, too often, you get a check mark on a form, you don't get a lot of feedback that you can use, and problems go unnoticed. And then suddenly someone comes along who doesn't like an employee, or the employee who's been misbehaving or doing things the wrong way because they didn't know any better for all this time, suddenly now they're faced with losing their job. So one of the markers that I laid down with EGA that I've had shared with Mr. DeGraw when I've met with him, from this board member's perspective, identify problems early with effective, fair evaluations, then fix problems, identify resources, mentors, BITSA, whatever program it is, to help a teacher improve performance before you remove. Remove comes last.
Thank you.
We're taking a long time.
We'll give you an exercise.
No, that's okay, I'm just kidding. You know, I touched on this a little bit. The teacher evaluation is something that a lot of collaboration is gonna have to take effect here coming up so we can get a good, strong program. It can't be one-sided with management taking all of the school boards going to make policy on evaluation. All the stakeholders have to be involved, all of our teachers. So I trust that we're going to have some workshops coming out. So we.
Whoops, sorry. Wow.
Whoops.
Yeah. No, it's not one of those. Sorry.
Time out in a second.
Don't move.
Cut back.
That's called austerity.
Did you guys get Rob Pierce over here?
Yeah. thank you.
Energy management.
Yeah. In any event, yeah, what we want to do is look at a good collaboration to make some good rules that we can really govern, and it's going to be good for both parties. I think teachers, all of us as human beings, we have to be evaluated. I mean, when Charlie and I were talking earlier today, in my last job for 34 years, I was always evaluated. I had to perform. I was in the management ranks, but if I didn't do my job, I wouldn't be around. And I think every teacher in their heart would want to see a good evaluation teacher. Not like we have now every 2 years or maybe 5 years when the other principal gets around to it, or you got all this paperwork going. It's kind of meaningless, really. And I think that we need to do something that's going to be very constructive. I think something's going to come out of it. That if a teacher is deficient, we want to help them get them back on track if they're able to really be a good, effective teacher. And how doing that, you have to have a good evaluation system. We don't have it right now. So that part there, I'm looking forward to the collaboration that we're going to do well in that area. Thank you.
Well, evaluation is extremely important. It doesn't matter where you go. You're going to need feedback. I think that's the number one thing, is to have a comfortable relationship where you can actually have a feedback. Is to have that relationship in existence prior to you saying, okay, well, by now you're not doing your job, so you need to be fired. We need to take a step back and really look at how we would improve a teacher. And I'd say, one, there are things that are in place. There's, for new teachers, there are teacher master teachers that work closely with them. For teachers that actually need improvement, I think that's the step where you can actually have a sort of a mentor program. But what I don't want to see is I don't want to see somebody making a decision on what's going to happen to a teacher. I want the EGEA, I want the units to be involved. I want this to be a team effort. I want this to be all stakeholders' project, not just one-sided. I want everyone. And I think that's the only way where you can actually move towards a good direction. That's the only way where you can actually accomplish something that everyone is a winner. Because it doesn't matter how you look at it. The teacher, the school board member, the administrator, we all have a kid's interest at heart. That's why we're in this business. We're in this business because we're in the business of producing good quality human beings. Folks that are prepared for the world and folks that will make a difference in their lives. And so we keep that in mind. That is our common interest. That our common interest, with that, we know the direction that we're headed in is to really just do what we need to do towards the students. Work together, work as a team.
Thank you, you can keep the mic. Next question is for you. What are your beliefs about charter schools as they relate to Elk Grove Unified School District?
I believe that let me start with this. Whenever there's taxpayers' money, I'm very, very cautious about using taxpayers' money to fund a private interest. That's my ground rule. However, when in the event that you're presented with a charter, you have to follow California law. Yes, as a board member, I would consider it, but as my number one premise, I would ask this: how is this going to take away from the students? Oftentimes, charter school, I have seen, they have data that tells me that, oh yeah, we're doing wonderful because our students are performing at such a high level. But I have seen personally that these charter schools have a tendency to select exactly who comes into their school. The data is misleading. I think America is special. I think a public free education is special in that it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, whether you speak English or not. If you're here, you're entitled to an education. And we are going to provide it to you. That's what makes America special. And that, I think, as a school board member, you have to protect that. You have to continue this so that this opportunity continues for all children. Now, when you have a charter coming in and saying, well, I might just take this to do that, that would be my number one question. How is this going to take away from our students? How is that going to take away from our kids now, our schools?
Well, I think I touched on charter schools a little bit earlier. As relates to Elk Grove, personally, I don't think we need a lot of charter schools in our district right now. Charter schools can be innovative. They can help certain areas that really are in need of a charter school. An example of that, when we are failing kids in a given area or a given school and they can't fix the problem, maybe a charter school could help them. But as it relates to Elk Grove Unified Schools District, we have one of the fewest charter schools in Northern California for a size district of 62,000 students. And that's indicative of the fine job that our administrators, our teachers are doing at all our locations, even at our Title I schools. I mean, there's some charter schools that aren't even doing well as our Title I schools right now. I've seen a lot of poor charter schools that are, they should be taken back over and put back into the mainstream of the public sector. Bottom line is, I'm not a big proponent of charter schools in Elk Grove Unified School District. If somebody can tell me where one would be affected, I will sit down and listen to you. But to take schools, a charter school now, and put in an area and siphon off some of the overachieving kids and to make it a public charter school, I don't support it at all.
You know, the reality is charter schools are the law, and so the district has to evaluate charter schools. For me, there's a three standards I look at anytime a charter proposal would come before the district. Number one, does it meet an unmet need in our district? And when they come to us and show me that unmet need, my first and foremost goal is to exploit every idea they have. I mean, you want to talk about why we don't have charters? Go to the Ag Academy at Elk Grove High. Go look at STEM and Green and the Engineering Academy and the Culinary Arts Academy. Look at some of the programs we're doing in the elementary schools with citizenship programs and some of the other things we're doing. We've been fortunate to not have a need for charter schools, and a lot of it's because of the innovation that we've seen at the schools. But test number one, you have to meet an unmet need. It's not charter for the sake of charter, like one of our city council members said to me when he asked me to support an actual proposal to close Harriet Eddy Middle School and turn it into a charter school. But you need more charter schools. Why? Well, because you don't have any. Well, we do. We have two. They're unique, Montessori and Elk Grove Chart. So one, you have to meet an unmet need. Number two, you have to meet that need in a way that doesn't harm our other kids. Well, what do I mean by that? You can't deselect your students. You can't send all of the English language learners back into our schools and increase those populations. You can't reject the special education kids, the ED kids, the students that don't drive your test scores up. And then number three, you have to have a governance model that proves number one and two will be successful, that we can hold you accountable on. We saw one of the most cynical efforts by a local official in recent years this year when they saw the tensions within our own family. They saw hurting families at Joseph Sims who were dealing with the struggle over, you know, boundary and some frustration. And we see politicians show up and they try and take advantage of that to run through a one of the worst written charter proposals we've seen in a long time. I will oppose that.
Thank you.
The legislature has approved shortening the school year by up to 25 days as a means of district saving money. As a board member, would you support this option?
No, I think that's just a total detriment to the children of California. Obviously, we're going through some really tough times with budget. The state of California, we have Measure 30 and 38 on the ballot this coming fall. We don't know how it's going to pan out a little bit. But to decrease the days of school, as one board member right now, I would oppose something like that. On the other hand, you ask, where is the money going to come from? Well, we don't really know yet. We talk about budgets. We're already trying to look at that at a distance now of some of the things that could take effect a little bit. But right now, the answer is not taking away the school days from our children in California, and particularly in our district right now. I think it would be a totally detriment. We've cut enough in public education. And I would love to talk to any legislator, the assembly. We simply don't want to go that route. And that's why I encourage everybody to get out. We have to vote. We want to make sure this measure passes. Thank you.
You know, probably the only person who knows better than, say, Rich Fagan over at district office, the issue with a furlough proposal and shortening the school year, is sitting in the back of the room, Charlie Chatton. I mean, there's somebody who's broken down our budget, and I think Charlie can attest to what I'm going to say here, which is furloughs don't really solve the problem for us. Furloughs are one-time savings, but we have to adopt three-year budgets. And so you do a furlough this year, you shorten the school year, you go through a lot of frustration, a lot of tension, and you harm a lot of kids' education. You take a month away from the school year. And you don't generate nearly the savings that the failure of 30 or 38 is going to require, because it's one-time money. And you have to go back to the bargaining table and you have to negotiate it year in and year out. It's not a solution either for our kids or, frankly, for our budget. So what do we have to do? Well, we have to leave no stone unturned. One of the things we did last night, or excuse me, it's Tuesday, it was Thursday now, isn't it? Tuesday night, one of the things we did was we authorized the refinancing of the district's facilities bonds, capital improvement bonds. That refinancing is going to save us between $200 and possibly $1 million a year, depending upon where our bond rating is and where our ultimate rating, where the interest rate is when we actually close the deal. Now, we take that money And that's savings that has to go towards new facilities, but we're able to take facilities repair and construction money that's currently in the general fund and slide that money over to use those dollars. That generates $200,000 to potentially $1 million a year in savings. That's a start. We've got to bolster, Ms. Amavisca's here tonight. One of the things she and I joined together on the other night was, let's look at what we can do to expand the use of our district grants process. $21 million this year.
Thank you.
We need to do more.
Thanks.
I would be opposed to that. Anything that reduces the classroom time for the student would be unreasonable to me. That's the reason why I'm running. Because if I look at last year, my kids actually lost 9 days of instruction. And when that happened, I said, what's going on? And when I look in the papers, I see the teachers protesting. I see all the stockpiling of money. I said, what is going on? And I keep asking these same questions, and I keep coming back and saying, look, enough is enough. If you're going to stockpile the money, you're going to give your ministers a raise, I want my kids in there 180 days. Now this Prop 30, I am keeping my fingers crossed. I'm hoping that's going to pass. I have a strong feeling it will, marginally. At least my phone bankers are calling on it as well. I think the true question here is, in the event that Proposition 30 does not pass, I think that's when we have to make sure that our relationship, the school board and all the stakeholders, parents and everyone, really has to be strong enough to actually look at it and say, where can the cuts come from? But I mean, as of right now, I believe that the legislators are mistaken in reducing the classroom. Taking 25 more days is really unreasonable. You're gonna wonder why the students are not performing in 10 years. It's because this is happening. Thanks.
Mr. Randall, next question is yours. EGEA believes this year's dollars should be spent on this year's students. How do you balance SCOE's requirement of a 3-year budget projection with the real needs of students enrolled today?
Well, I think you get at the heart of where the tensions have been, the philosophical divide. And I think both sides have merit in their position. On one hand, we have to look at 3-year projections because it's mandated on us by state law and by SCOE. The flip side is this year's dollars need to benefit this year's kids. You hear a lot of talk about stockpiling of cash, but what you've also got to remember is we had to sell $25 million in bonds this summer, temporary bonds, just to make payroll. Because while there was a $65 million ending fund reserve, that was a paper reserve until in September. The state withheld $100 million in funding for our district until September. We just paid those bonds off on Monday. So you get into this goofy system where the state says you get money, but they withhold it. And so we did finish last year with a $65 million ending fund reserve. We're in a 3-year budget, and in the third year of the budget right now, we have a $13 million deficit spending that reserve. That reserve is what's going to keep us from having to lay off teachers and employees at the end of this year. It's what's going to give us the cushion and the balance we need next year. It's what's going to soften the blow if Prop 30 doesn't pass. So I think one of the things we've got to do is come up with new and innovative ways to bridge that philosophical divide, because I think the arguments on both sides are real and meritorious. That's why I've spent so much time over here, sitting with Charlie, sitting with Scott and Cheryl and the rest of the staff, trying to figure out how do we build that bridge.
Well, there's no doubt that we have gone through some very, very difficult times, and the number one priority in any district is to remain solvent, and it's something that it's in front of us all the time. Budgets are very complicated. I've been on the school board for 12 years, and I got to tell you that it took me over a year to even comprehend a multi-year budget. You can submit to the department, to the County Office of Education. It just kind of blew me away, and it's very difficult. Looking at the lens and looking at all the assumptions that go on, I hate to use a word, somebody saying stockpiling money. That's not done purposely. We took a hard look after all this is over with, our negotiations, and I know we're already trying to look at a different perspective of our budget. every board member, not necessarily just totally what administrators tell us, but the how it's really going to affect kids, how it's going to affect our teachers. And it's not an easy thing to get up and look and explain a budget in the eyes of somebody saying, well, this line, that line, you go down one by one, and you still can't grasp it. Because the county, they want to submit a three-year budget, and it has to be balanced. You end up with assumptions. But where my issue came in, or my challenge, was coming from an organization that had budgets, P&L sheets, spreadsheets, and you had revenue coming in. Revenue decreased, you responded, and reduced your payroll rapidly. Doesn't it work that way in the school financing? And it is very, very difficult.
I think the number one thing is to make sure you stick to the statute. Statute says if it's 3-4%, stick to 3-4% reserve. Don't tell me that just because the statute says that, we're gonna stockpile 13.4% of the budget. When you look at that, you have these questions like, why do you overlay off? Why do you have teachers who actually are given pink slip and then pay for the due process hearings? And look around and say, oh, we don't have money. I think those are the real questions that we have to ask. The bottom line here is if you look at the money that comes in, yes, of course, you have to make sure that you spend it this year. Money, this is taxpayers' money. It's not meant to be saved. But I understand the difficulties of the board. I understand that they have to make sure that they budget, you know, several years in advance. But yes, but at the same time, really, it has to be within reason. Stick to the law, follow the law. Really? I mean, just follow the law and we will be okay. We wouldn't have protests on the streets. We wouldn't have, you know, the labor's relations being ruined in this wonderful district. I'm talking to you because I've seen this. I've seen this in the last several years and it keeps happening and happening again. And so as a parent, you know, as a fellow educator, really, you know, I feel for you. And That's one of the reasons why I'm running.
Mr. Lyon, this will be our final question tonight. What do you see as the major concerns, the crucial issues, facing Elk Grove Unified School District teachers?
I think the major concern really is if Proposition 30 doesn't pass. Now, with what I said earlier, I'm hoping that it does pass, and I have a good feeling that it will. But in the event that it doesn't pass, I think that's when the serious questions really have to come. Where are the cuts going to come from? And if you have a relationship between the stakeholders that's already not 100%, I think those are serious issues. How are we going to accomplish that? How are we going to work together if the relationship isn't there? Now, it's wonderful that you have board members who are actually attempting to reach out. But my question is, why hasn't this happened before? Why did they wait until the protest? Why did they wait until the election year? I think this is the kind of relationship that needs to happen early. Needs to happen on a regular basis. What's wrong with a board member having coffee with EGA leadership? What's wrong with board members actually, you know, having a weekend outing? This is how you build relationship. If you don't have this relationship, you look at what has happened in several years, and then that's the end result. You have a distrust. You have lawyers thrown in, you have mediators thrown in that try these scare tactics and say, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, that's possible negotiations. And then that's why that would be the most important thing. Number two is we really have to look at what we can do with schools that aren't up to par. There are schools that are like that. And in order to actually make sure they're all on the same, we have to look at the ones that are actually doing well and share and exchange the information.
Well, number one, it will be devastating in terms of the funding for public education. That's what's going to really affect teachers, administrators, all the way around. If we don't have the sufficient public funding, it's going to affect all of the country. That and particularly California with our Proposition 30 that's on the line. So this is imperative that we have that. I think number one, the positive part in our school district at least is that we're okay. We're going to be okay until June of next year because we had our reserves. I feel for some of the schools, our surrounding districts come January and Prop 30 doesn't pass, some of them are going to be in a world hurt, trust me. I don't know where they're going to get the money from the last of June. We're going to be fine. In that time, if it doesn't pass 30, we're already talking about different measures that we want to do. We're going to look at our budget. We're going to look at all the things that we can continue to keep our teachers as long as we can without laying them off. We have to look at SAS class sizes. A lot of them, we've had one of the luxuries in our district of having a little class size compared to Sac City, some of our surrounding districts around. So there's a lot of things that we have in front of us right now, so we're not going to just rest on our laurels on that. Thank you.
You know, one of the things that principles that I held when I came to the board was that I shouldn't presume to think that every teacher has the same concern or the same issue. You know, many of you know Kitty Laubacher. She was one of my teachers growing up, and Kitty asked me to meet with her after I came on the board. And she knew that I was interested in facilities, and she said the most number one issue for Kitty, setting aside all the big issues, make sure that you put enough women's restrooms on a high school campus for teachers to get. And when I talk to my wife talks about, as a family, she's been pink slipped every year by Sac City. You talk about stockpiling funds, well, Sac City spent every dollar every year and then some. And what happened? Well, Sac City laid off 400 teachers this year when we laid off 37. We've seen the pain and the hardship that's brought to our family. Sonny didn't know if she was going to have a job until the first day of school this year. And she would get emails from the district offering everything from 120% contract to a two-tenths contract because they're in disarray. They didn't make the tough choices. We did. One of the other things I'm going to tell the teachers, I respect you enough not to make frivolous arguments. I'm not going to propose that somehow by denying step increases to four cabinet members that that's going to solve our budget problems. You know, that somehow $22,000 a year in reduced spending, that's the total cost there, is going to save anything. I'm not going to make the argument that somehow by denying Dr. Ladd's wife health benefits or somebody else health benefits is going to solve our problem when we're not paying a penny for Dr. Ladd's wife's health benefits right now. We've got to get beyond frivolous and silly arguments and get to the real core of the matter, which is we have a $13 million deficit in 3 years if Prop 30 passes. And we're not going to solve that with a little bit here and a little bit there, but we're going to solve it collaboratively, working together, meeting with EGA like I've done every other week, plus how many times do we get together on the phone, Maggie? That's how we solve the problem.
Well, we'd like to thank you for your time.
Can I say one thing?
One thing.
I just want to.
No, they might have to say one thing too.
And I don't mind that. But I just want to end on a positive note that we still work for one of the best unified school districts in Northern California. And I want to emphasize that. As one, I don't like to dwell on the past a lot. I'm a forward type individual. We all learn, we move forward. This big ship is still moving forward every year. Look at the data, look at the facts. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank everybody for participating, especially our moderators, who have to go to school tomorrow morning. This is an exciting time, very nervous time, especially with the propositions 30 and 32 coming in November. So like all the candidates have stated, 30 is critical for us, and hopefully we'll get that message out and we'll have a good outcome in November. I'd also like to recognize that we have three other candidates here. James Latoa from Area 1.
Aloha, everyone.
Anthony Perez from Area 1.
Tony Perez.
And Perez. Carmine Forcina from Area 7. And there are some other flyers up here, so if you did not catch one beforehand, feel free to pick them one up on your way out. And with that,
next Wednesday.
There is another candidate forum next Wednesday for our Area 3, and we'll be still working on Area 1. All right? Have
Area
a good night.
And
Area 7, sorry. Area 7 next Wednesday, Area 1 we're still working on. Sorry.